If you're looking for a podcast to give you tips on how to prepare for the next solar eclipse in the contiguous United States in 2044.
I'm pretty sure I'll be dead.
Yeah, me too. So this is not that podcast.
No, we don't care.
No. However, this is comedy,
tragedy, marriage.
Welcome to Comedy, Tragedy, Marriage, a podcast where a longtime married couple takes turns each episode selecting a movie, TV show, or documentary to watch. We watch it together, and then we sit down and discuss why we liked it, loved it, or loathed it together, and share that discussion with you. I'm Stan the Movie Man. I review films occasionally at stanthemovieman.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Movie Man Stan. You can follow the podcast at CT Marriage. You can also follow me on Threads, Spoutable, and Blue Sky, all there at Stan the Movie Man. If you have a question for us, perhaps you have a suggestion for a movie you'd like us to watch and talk about on the podcast, send it to us in an email, comedytragedymarriage@gmail.com. There have been a lot of crickets, a lot of spider webs in that mailbox. So if you would be so kind, if you have anything you'd like to ask or a movie you'd like to suggest, please send it to us, comedytragedymarriage@gmail.com. Joining me, as always, is my other half.
Maud, the unwelcome broad.
Oh, well.
It was your movie choice.
You're always welcome here. We've been married for a very, very long time.
It's my shtick.
Okay.
You know.
It was my choice of film this week. And this week I chose the 2017 psychological black horror film, as it's described on its Wikipedia page, Get Out.
Hence the unwelcome.
Yes. Yeah. It is starring Daniel Kaluuya, Allison Williams, Bradley Whitford, Caleb Landry Jones, Catherine Keener, Stephen Root, and more. It was written by Jordan Peele, also directed by Jordan Peele, and he was part of the team that produced it, along with Jason Blum of Blumhouse. It is a story involving race and a sort of science fiction-y plot, but we'll get to that. In the story, Daniel Kaluuya plays Chris Washington. He is dating Rose Armitage, played by Allison Williams. They are a mixed-race couple. And they are about to go visit Rose's parents, the Armitage family, for the first time. And Chris asks the question, do they know I'm black? And she tells him, no, I haven't told them that, but that's all right, because they are very progressive. They are very liberal. My dad would have voted for Obama for a third term if he could have. So even though Chris is concerned about his just showing up as a surprise, on their doorstep as Rose's boyfriend, it's no big deal. They'll be fine with you. Chris's friend, best friend, Rod Williams, played by Little Rel Howery, is a TSA agent, and he thinks this is a horrible idea to go visit the white girlfriend's all-white family. He thinks they're going to try to, kidnap him and turn him into a sex slave or something. Rod is the comic relief in the film.
We've seen him someplace else, haven't we?
He played Buddy in Free Guy.
Okay.
He was the best friend to Guy in that film.
I knew we knew him from somewhere.
He's also a stand-up comedian, but he's been doing more acting here lately, or at least that's where I think more people have seen him. So anyway, Rose and Chris go on this weekend to visit Rose's parents, and they welcome him with open arms. The Armitage family, Dean, played by Bradley Whitford, is a neurosurgeon, and Missy Armitage, Rose's mom, played by Catherine Keener, is a psychiatrist. They show him around their rather large home.
It's a lovely country estate.
Yes, it's out in the middle of nowhere. They kind of have to drive through the woods.
They actually hit a deer on their way up.
Well, a deer, yeah, jumps across the road and they sort of sideswipe a deer.
It's like, dang, Bambi.
And a cop, they call the police. And he comes out, and he tells them who they should have called. And even though Rose is driving, he wants to see Chris's license. And Rose gets
huffy,
all up in the cop's face about why that he doesn't need to see Chris's license. And Chris doesn't have a driver's license. He has an ID, a state-issued ID. But she, you know,
it's like, you're profiling him.
She eventually prevails. He says, never mind, get that headlight fixed, because the headlight's busted because of the deer. But anyway, they make it finally to the Armitage home, and the family welcomes him with open arms. They have, and he meets the family's help. They have a black groundskeeper and a black maid. And the Bradley Whitford's character acknowledges, yeah, this looks weird, you know, the white family with the black servants. And he says, they help take care of my mom and dad in their declining years, and we just didn't feel right about just letting them go, so they help us out around the house. But these two folks, the two servants, act kind of weird.
They're kind of Stepford and creepy.
Yeah, they're very, very odd. Mechanical, and they're odd.
Sort of not quite themselves.
Yeah. So anyway. And then later that night, we meet Rose's brother, Jeremy Armitage, played by Caleb Landry Jones. Now, Caleb Landry Jones, I don't know if it's typecasting or if he's like this maybe in real life, but he tends to be cast as smart-alecky,
douchehole.
Rude, yes, douchebags. And he, you know, there's some uncomfortable conversation at dinner. He talks about, you know, is Chris into sports? And he brings specifically MMA up, and Chris says, no, he's not into that violent sport. And the brother says, well, you know, with your body type and genetic makeup, you could, with the right training, you could be a beast. And it's like, what just happened? And he wants him to get up because he's going to put him in, like, he's going to put him in a headlock or, you know, show him some moves or something. But the parents shut that down pretty quickly. And also, the brother, Jeremy's been drinking, and Chris says, I tend not to get in pretend fights with drunk people. So, yeah, that's a weird kind of night. And
cringy.
And Chris, who smokes, has, you know, is having trouble getting to sleep, and he takes a walk in the middle of the night, and he sees the groundskeeper running across the yard just at full bore, just as fast as he can, and he's running straight at him, and he's like, is this guy gonna attack me? But at the last second, he veers off to one side, and you know, it's like strange, but okay. And then he goes back in the house, and
Missy
is sitting in like a library looking area, and turns out it's actually the office where she does her work at home, and she does hypnosis to help people with various problems, including stopping smoking. And while she is, while they are talking, she sort of surreptitiously hypnotizes Chris.
Yeah, she's having a lovely cup of tea.
Yes, and by stirring the cup of tea loudly with a spoon, she is hypnotizing Chris, getting him to tell about when Chris's mom died, and something that he doesn't want to talk about, but he talks about it anyway because he's suggestible being hypnotized. And he has this very bizarre experience of like being outside of his own existence in what looks like space, or being underwater, but just surrounded by blackness, and looking up at a TV and being able to see Missy up there. And then the next thing he knows, he wakes up and he's in bed again.
It's like, was this just the weirdest dream ever?
Yeah.
He's thinking.
And then the next day they find out there's some gathering, some party of all of the Armitage's friends that next day. And this Rose is like, oh, I forgot that they were doing that, or I thought that was later, or whatever. And all of these people show up, mostly older, wealthy people. Some of them are very seemingly ill. He meets Jim Hudson, who's played by Stephen Root, who is a gallery owner who is blind, who, because of a genetic condition, lost his sight. But Chris is aware of Hudson, and Hudson's aware of Chris's talent as a photographer. And, you know, all of these people are saying odd things, making weird racial comments about Chris to Rose, and everybody's just sort of rolling their eyes, you know, thinking that it's these white people have never seen a black guy before, and they're trying to, you know, make conversation, but it's all very cringeworthy. But there's something else going on under the surface. Something else is happening that takes up the last maybe hour of the movie, and that's what this entire weekend has been about. I don't want to spoil it for anybody. This movie's not that old, and probably a lot of people haven't seen it. Where did we watch it?
Sunday.
No, where? Oh, Amazon Prime. It's available to stream if you're already,
Oh,
bless you,
excuse me.
an Amazon Prime member. You can stream it there for no extra charge, but it's available to rent on all the platforms. Of course, when you're doing a movie like this, where your primary protagonist is black and your antagonists, and it does become, a him versus them kind of situation if you haven't seen the movie. It's going to be racially charged. The whole idea of the story becomes, this black kid is at the mercy of these white people. And it's a lot of people were very uncomfortable once that part of it. A lot of white people were uncomfortable with it once that part of the story became clear. And that hurt it at awards time because a lot of the older Academy members, Academy Awards members, just refused to see it because they didn't want to be preached to about race relations, which. It's sort of about that, but it's also not about that at all. And I mean, it's also just a really interesting and well done film that was made for very little money, with a fantastic cast,
Yeah.
and yeah, a scene stealing performance by Little Rel Howery. He's Granted, he is the comic relief, but he kind of takes over the movie whenever he's on
He's
screen.
magnetic like that. He's like you can't not watch him.
Yeah.
He's gonna be a scene stealer.
Yeah. There's a scene where he's trying to, where he believes Chris has been abducted, and he goes to the police, and it's a very funny scene. So, you just have to see it.
Yeah.
But there are deeper implications to this story. It's not just a horror movie, not just a thriller. It is commentary, but it is not so heavy-handed that it's not also an enjoyable film.
No, it's very
If
entertaining.
you like movies that have some tension, some stakes, but are also filled with characters that you like until you don't.
One thing was that, there's kind of an ambiguous character. Are they a good guy, really? Are they not a good guy, really? And when we find out one way or the other, it's a, and I don't want to spoil anything either, but it's a very well acted scene. It's just a very well acted scene, and I can't really say anything else without spoiling. So, but it was, I would not, for me, I would not classify this as a horror film. It's to me, it's more like psychological suspense, and it is a social commentary.
Well, I think what makes it horror is, well, again, not wanting to spoil anything, but it's what happens to
There's
some
some.
of the people that we don't see. It's what happens to some of the people before the movie starts and what could happen to
Yeah,
Chris.
off camera.
Yes.
And there's a little bit of violence. I mean, the whole Bambi thing was a jump scare for me.
Well, yeah, that.
It's like, what? Wait? Yeah. So, and it's like, I had a cousin once hit a deer with her car, and I don't know if it was like because it wasn't like Bambi ran out, it was like Bambi flew across, and it was just jarring for me. And we see, dying Bambi in the woods, and there's some violence. It's not overly gory, really,
There's some
but
gore
it's,
in one particular scene.
yeah, toward the end. But it's by far not the goriest thing I've ever seen.
Oh, no.
So it's not, it doesn't qualify as horror for that reason.
Well, there are no monsters. There's no supernatural creatures. But there is some gore, and that, but I do think it qualifies as horror simply because of what this group of people is willing to do to another person.
The subject matter,
That's what
yeah.
makes it horror. The first Friday the 13th movie wasn't about this unstoppable supernatural killer. Spoiler alert for Friday the 13th. It was about a mother taking revenge on a bunch of teenagers for letting her son drown, even though the people she was killing was not the people that let her son drown, because she just was crazy.
Okay, Friday the 13th was
Yes,
right?
yes.
Okay. I get all of that mixed up. See, that's what I think of as horror, and that has never been my jam. I've
Right.
not seen a lot of those movies, and I probably have done myself a disservice by not seeing them. It's just it's not a thing that has interested me. Okay, if you hear rustling, it is time for me to blow this candle out. So I am going to move over here and blow this candle out.
Well, why don't you blow that candle out?
Oh, actually, I don't need to blow it out. I just need to turn it.
Okay.
It's on a slightly unlevel surface, and so we have to make sure that they burn evenly. So it's not time to blow it out. It was just time to rotate it. So now we can continue.
Okay, thank you very much.
It's a lovely coffee-scented candle. It's delightful.
Yes. And as you say, it has a lovely throw. Daniel Kaluuya was, I think it's the first time I'd ever seen him in anything. And he is just fascinating to watch, in this role, because he's both trying to not make any waves, and then there he reaches a point where, all right, it's time to create a
Tsunami.
tsunami, and he does what he can, but there's only so much he can do.
He's just one man.
Yes, true. Allison Williams, who I only knew from a few scattered episodes that I'd seen of Girls, the HBO show.
Yeah.
I didn't know much about her as an actress, but she's terrific in this movie.
Yeah, I was surprised. I don't really, I have never watched any episodes of Girls, so I know she's Brian Williams's daughter. That's the extent of my knowledge of her. But it turns out girlfriend can act, apparently.
Yeah.
So good on her.
She's got a surprisingly broad range,
Oh, yeah.
and when she needs to turn on the smart aleck, she can do it. And of course, Bradley Whitford is terrific as the dad.
I've always loved Catherine
And
Keener.
Catherine Keener is very low key and very laid back.
She generally does give subdued performances, and that has kind of in the works of hers that I'm familiar with, that is kind of her stock and trade, in that she's not an over-the-top actor. And her roles that I've seen her perform have been sort of not manic, crazy, over the top kinds of characters. They've been much more nuanced and subtle. She actually has a large role in the movie with Julia Louis-Dreyfus and James Gandolfini that I just forgot the name of.
Yeah, I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, so let me look that up. But she's very, I've loved her for a long time. I've loved her in everything that I've seen her do.
Yeah, she's had a long career. Not always in the biggest, flashiest parts, but yeah, she's been around for a long time. Now, I want to test your memory a little bit. Excuse me. The actress that played
Enough
the
said. Sorry.
Enough
That was
said.
the name of the movie.
The police detective that Laurel Howery talked
Erica
to.
Alexander from Living Single.
Okay, I was wondering if you recognized
Oh
her.
gosh, yes.
Okay, that's all. That's
Yeah, she
all
was
for that.
Max, the attorney in Living Single.
And of course, we already talked about Caleb Landry Jones as the brother, Stephen Root, who is great in everything he does, even if he's just on screen for just a couple of minutes.
Small role here, but pivotal.
Yes,
Very important.
Little Rel Howery is like we said, a scene stealer.
I love him.
There's just a ton of great performances in this movie.
And an excellent script and an excellent story.
Both of which are from Mr. Jordan
Jordan Peele.
Peele, who
Late of
when
Key and Peele.
yes when we when we when I first heard that he was branching off to do horror movies, it was like,
Wait, what?
yeah, I was like,
Yeah.
he's doing what now? Because he had this very successful show on Comedy Central, Key and Peele. I thought they had been a team for a long time, but they really hadn't. They had similar backgrounds, but they really had, and they'd made a movie together called Keanu, which was pretty funny. But there was this pivot. Sorry, this pivot toward filmmaking, specifically horror filmmaking, was just really
Kind of out there for
kind
you.
of unexpected, but it has proven to be very profitable and fruitful for him. He's made a bunch of really good films. I mean, there have been three that have that I've seen that he's been the writer, gosh, and director
Have they all been collaborations with Blumhouse?
of. I don't know, right off the top of my head. There was Get Out. There was Us, which is another sort of twisty, weird. You might question it as a horror movie, but I think it is. And then there is Nope, which is this weird alien saga. That kind of defies explanation. It's not my favorite, but it's still a fascinating looking, and I was constantly interested in what was happening. But again, not my favorite of his films. They go in order of release. Get Out's my favorite, Us, and then Nope. The recently released Monkey Man, where Dave Patel, or Dev Patel rather, directed and stars, he's a producer on that one.
Oh, okay.
He produced the Candyman reboot, and he helped write it. He also produced the Black Klansman, which came out in 2018. And I mentioned Keanu a while back, earlier, and he was a writer and producer on that. So he's got, he's got a lot of filmmaking under his belt, but this whole kind of his genre of choice, if he's going to direct it, write it, and produce it, it is going to be in the horror genre. I don't know what his next might be, but I am looking forward to it, whatever it is. The budget for Get Out was a paltry $4.5 million.
Wow.
Would you, I mean, I don't know if you've seen it or been on the Wikipedia for it.
No.
Okay. Would you care to guess how much it made worldwide?
I wouldn't.
Okay.
I'm thinking the official term would probably be a crap ton.
Yes, actually, you're very close. $255.4 million.
Good googly moogly. I
Roughly,
say that is a decent return on investment.
that's over 50 times its production budget. It won the Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay, which of course he took home because,
And good screenplay.
yeah.
Really good.
It won another Academy Award, but I don't recall right off the top of my head which one that was. And it was also nominated for lots of other awards as well. And it's a really good movie that starts down, takes you down one path, and then you hit an off ramp at one point, and it's like, oh, this is, if you don't know what to expect, I knew what to expect, that it was going to change course, but I didn't know it was going to change that much of a course. And
You
it
think you're
is.
zigging, and then you zag, and then you really
Then you
zag.
loop-de-loop.
Yeah. It's like a roundabout,
Yeah, it's oh,
which I
it's
have
like a
trouble with anyway.
roundabout if it if it's in, if it's in 3D and it goes, it's like a Hot Wheels track, loop-de-loop. It's just, it really messes with you when you're not expecting what's coming. So I personally cannot recommend Get Out more highly. I am giving it 5 stars. Maude?
Same.
Okay.
Yeah, five Stepford creepy people. It was really good, and I was invested right away. So it was very watchable and very entertaining, and very thought-provoking from the get-go.
Yeah, it starts, I'll tell you this much, it starts with an abduction, but it isn't our main character.
No, it seems completely random,
It
and what the heck was this?
right, and that's what I thought in the theater. I thought, wait,
What does this have to do with anything?
did Daniel Kaluuya get abducted right at the beginning of the movie?
Yeah, no, that wasn't him.
But no, it's not him. And for the longest time, I didn't know that we see that guy again later in the movie.
But we did.
But we do. You'll also notice a preponderance of hats
Yeah.
on some folks in the film. That's all I'm gonna say. But yeah, I guess we both highly
Yeah.
recommend seeing Get Out. You can see it for no additional charge if you are an Amazon Prime member, but you can rent it or buy it on all the usual places if you want to stream. And I think you can watch it with commercials on Tubi.
If you like stories like Shirley Jackson's The Lottery, or I think it was O. Henry wrote Lamb to the Slaughter, if you like stories like those, you will like this film.
Cool. All right. What else have you been watching, reading, listening to, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
Speaking of stories, just this very day, I finished a book by author Samantha Harvey called Orbital. It is not a huge book, but there is so much in it and to it, with a couple of disclaimers. Now, if you are someone who needs a very heavily plot-driven situation in a book where you like, A to B to C, all the way to the conclusion, this may not be the book for you. However, that being said, this novel is gorgeous. I had multiple moments reading this book where I just had to take a moment and reread multiple times a passage that I had just read, just to absorb the beauty of language that Samantha Harvey employs in her writing. The premise of the book is there are four astronauts and two cosmonauts in a spacecraft orbiting the Earth. And for each 24-hour period of time, and for each Earth day, they make 16 orbits around the planet. And so the chapters are divided into, say, orbit one ascending, orbit one descending, on such through until they get through the 16 orbits. Much of what the book is gorgeously descriptive narrative of what they observe of the Earth from their vantage point. They follow a typhoon as it develops, and they can see it, grow and expand and change over the course of its life before it makes landfall, and then after, they see, they come to recognize different cities and landmarks and things, by night and by day. And just the beauty of Earth that we take for granted because we're standing on it, and their perspective of their beautiful Earth home, looking at it from 250 miles away in space as they orbit repeatedly throughout the course of one Earth day. We also get to know a little bit of their lives before this mission. And they're a little bit of their family dynamics and what they what they're missing down on Earth. One of the astronauts loses their mother during this mission. Of course, she's like, 250 miles up in space orbiting, and she can't just, hop on her broom and fly home. There are poignant images of life happening down here while they're up there in something of a suspended animation. There's a lot of descriptions of their gravity-free environment and how they move, how they sleep, how they eat. It is just a glorious little novel. I cannot recommend it highly enough. Again, if you need a strongly plot-driven, linear type of situation, this may not be for you. However, if you enjoy something a little different than that, something that's definitely not earthbound by any stretch, and just scads of beautifully selected words crafted into perfectly created sentences, stacked up into glorious paragraphs that scream of the beauty of language. I cannot recommend it highly enough. Orbital by Samantha Harvey.
Okay. That seems like a pretty high recommendation from the librarian.
Oh my gosh. So, s such a beautiful. Such a beautiful book. I can't even, like, I'm stumbling all over myself because I can't even so much. So, and I've picked out a couple of things to take on our little sojourn, because Stan and I will be doing a little vacation thing. So I've picked a couple of things to take with me to read. So, what have you been watching, Stan?
Well, you and I just watched the first episode of the fifth and final season of Star Trek Discovery, where they are chasing after some powerful device for the creation of life, which ties back to, I believe, a seventh episode, a seventh season episode of Next Generation. But we've only seen the first episode. It's all, it's all messy and,
Complex,
complex and out there.
multi-layered, and it will be wonderful.
So that's on Paramount Plus. Also on Paramount Plus, we watched Cyber Sleuths: The Idaho Murders.
Ugh.
Okay. Now, I am a fan, and I think Maud is as well, a fan of true crime.
Yeah.
We watch a lot of investigation discovery shows. We watch a lot of true crime documentaries on various channels. And we have watched a show or two about the Idaho murders, the four college students who were essentially slaughtered in the house they rented, and the search and eventual capture of the person that the police believe is responsible. There has, especially in the era of the monetization of TikTok and YouTube, been a proliferation of these desktops and smartphone cyber sleuths.
A glut, even.
Yes, who take minuscule bitelets, molecules of information. And then from that, extrapolate or artificially inflate them to create scenarios and conclusions that have no real evidence or basis in fact. For instance, one of these people, an alleged psychic, and I don't know if it's fair to call her a cyber sleuth. She's woo-woo. She claimed her tarot cards pointed to a female college professor on the campus where the kids went, and that she had had an affair with one of the girls, and that was why, and that she was responsible for their deaths. She named this woman. She gave out her phone number, her email address, the building she worked in. She was responsible for a lot. This information being out was responsible for a lot of like death threats and harassment that this woman got. And it was based on tarot card readings.
Hello.
That has led to a defamation lawsuit that I hope shuts this you this TikToker down. But all of these other TikTokers, they present these theories, and they ask que they're just asking questions about why the police haven't caught anybody before they'd caught somebody. How do they know that there is no longer a threat to the rest of the campus? How do they why are they looking for a white Elantra, which is what they were looking for? There are millions of white Elantras in the United States. Why do they think this white Elantra? They just say this stuff and have no comprehension of what an actual criminal investigation involves. And then when they arrested the alleged killer, they said, "Well, who's this guy? Nobody's heard of this guy." Well, no, you haven't heard of that guy because you're not in law enforcement. You're not in the FBI, the people who were actually investigating law enforcement. They had heard of the guy because they found a knife sheath on the scene. They tested the DNA and it came back to that guy. And, well, he had to have an accomplice. How could one guy kill four people? And why weren't these other two? And there are some legitimate questions about why the two survivors, who weren't touched at all, why they waited so many hours, like, I don't know, what was it, 6 or 8 hours before they called the police? There are legitimate questions. But then that spawned theories as well. The house was full of drugs, and they were clearing it out, and they're just people are just offering that up as fact when nobody knows why they didn't call the cops, or at least nobody on TikTok and YouTube knows why they didn't. And some of these TikTokers and YouTubers are criminals themselves.
Ugh.
Some of them have done time for various and sundry things. So, look, I understand it's fun to speculate. It's fun to talk with your friends about these cases and throw out all these wild theories. But just because you can make a couple of bucks on TikTok if you have enough followers and enough views, doesn't mean you get to trash somebody's life.
And don't get in the way of a legitimate police investigation for the love of all that's holy.
Yes. So,
You are not helping.
there were several people on this show who I wanted to smack. I'm not a violent individual, but if they had been within arm's reach, I would have smacked them. But anyway, if you can stand it, what is it, 3 or 4 episodes?
Three.
Three, is called Cyber Sleuths, The Idaho Murders. It is on Paramount Plus.
I thought it was going to be something different, and I'm really sorry.
Well, I don't know. Sometimes it's good to get your blood boiling a little bit. And we watched on Amazon Prime a documentary film called Scotty and the Secret History of Hollywood. This may be another one of these where if you're listening on a smart speaker, or you're listening the speaker on your phone and people around you can hear, you might want to turn this off, plug in some
Kind of
earbuds.
not safe for work, exactly.
Exactly. I'm not going to get graphic or anything, but you just take my word for it.
Scotty
Three, wait,
Bowers.
3, 2, 1. Scotty Bowers.
Scotty Bowers worked in Hollywood at a gas station slash brothel.
Well, it wasn't a brothel.
Well, but
It
he was
was it
hooking
was
people up with talent.
well, yes, he was. He was hooking up young men with older men who were in the closet
And
at a
sometimes
time.
men with women and women with women and all different
Yes,
configurations of.
sometimes a woman with a couple, sometimes a man with a couple, sometimes a man with a couple of men. I mean, whatever configuration was looking for something, Scotty could hook them up.
Yes.
Now, Scotty didn't start out in this business, he got picked up by Walter Pidgeon, an actor, who said, "Oh, it's a hot day, and you'd look good in my pool. Wouldn't that be more comfortable?" He said, "Sure." And they went to Walter Pidgeon's house and messed around, and through that, Scotty figured out he could make a living by setting up these older men who were in the closet, either gay or bisexual, and if he could find enough good-looking guys who were willing to do whatever these other guys wanted, he could make money for both the men and himself, you know, setting up these dates.
And this is in the 40s, 50s?
Yeah, this is the 40s, right after World War II. And, you know, Scotty had seen some stuff in the war. He'd lost a brother in the war. I think Scotty had some PTSD that he never dealt with.
Oh, probably.
Scotty was a hoarder, as you'll see when you watch the movie, because he's got two houses full of stuff, and the only way to walk through it is the little pathways. There's stuff stacked up all over the place. And he won't throw anything away. He even stops on the side of the road to pick up a toilet. A toilet that he complains looks like a low flush toilet that he doesn't want. But he stops the next day and picks it up anyway. Because you never know, you might need it. And, you know, he's got all these. He's written a book. There is a book about his life. While people complain that he's outing these Hollywood stars, everybody from Walter Pidgeon to Cary Grant and beyond, as either being gay or bisexual or involved in throuples or whatever, you know, he's nobody has said he's lying. Nobody has been able to prove that anything he's saying didn't happen. Now, granted, pretty much everybody he's talking about is dead, and Scotty's dead. Scotty's died back in, like, what, 2017 or something like that, from kidney failure.
Not sure.
But, I definitely know for sure he's dead. I'm just not sure which year. But, nobody says that what he's saying isn't the truth. They were just all these private little secrets that nobody wanted to get into the press, because even though the studios knew these
and a
actors,
lot of their peers knew.
Yes, the studios and their peers knew that these actors and actresses were involved in relationships that would be frowned upon by the general public, even though a lot of the general public was involved in those relationships as well. You know, they would have lost their jobs. They would have lost their contracts in Hollywood, or if they were in a secondary position, like in wardrobe or costume design or set design or whatever. They would have been fired from the studio if it had been found out that they were gay or whatever. So Scotty made sure that he kept all of his secrets until he wrote this book, when all of those people were dead. I kind of admire him for it. Now, granted, I also think, you know, there were things about his life that I don't admire him for. Like, he made sure that, you know, even though his daughter died of an infection after a back alley abortion, he didn't take any time off from doing his business. he continued doing his business. And that and the hoarding and some other things makes me think that he's probably still messed up from the war.
Oh, yeah. Well,
And
I mean, and he talks about, his own sexual abuse as a child,
yeah.
which.
Which he blows off like, eh, it's no big deal. The priest passed me around, and that's how I learned how to do things. What?
Yeah.
So, yeah. He's an interesting individual. May not be everybody's cup of tea, but it's available to watch for no extra charge on Amazon Prime. Scotty and the Secret History of Hollywood. Anything else from you?
No, next week is my turn. I have no idea yet, so we'll see how things develop.
Well, yes, and we will be at our retreat, so
And also squee.
yes. So thank you very much for joining us on this edition of Comedy Tragedy Marriage. We appreciate it. If you'd be so kind as to give us a follow, like, rate, review, whatever it is you can do on your podcast platform of choice. But if you can do that for us on Spotify, that will help us out the most. If you have a question or a movie you'd like to suggest that we watch, feel free to send us an email, comedytragedymarriage@gmail.com. You can also leave us a voice message by clicking the link in the description of this episode. I'm Stan the Movie Man. That's Maud the Movie Broad. Love you.
Love you.
And until next time,
Later.
later.